Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we talk about Adventures of Babysitting, a former Patreon-exclusive release from behind the paywall. We're tying this together with Baby's Day Out, another story where the babies get out and ruin everything in downtown Chicago. I don't know what to tell you. This one is done by Chris Columbus, same guy who directed Home Alone and the first couple Harry Potter's movies. Baby's Day Out is John Hughes. John Hughes, of course, is the person who discovered Chris Columbus. So this feels like a Hughes movie, even though it isn't. But I want you to enjoy young Elizabeth Shue, a blues number. It's wild. Enjoy, guys. Thanks.
Here we are. Welcome to Myopia Movies, recording from our war bunker. This week, we're doing Adventures in Babysitting, the movie that I could have sworn was Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, but was wrong about it. I'm host Nick Hoffman. On panel we have?
Author Matthew W. Quinn, and my dad's family's from Chicago, so I do kind of like the city.
No, I like the city as well. Hi, this is Daniel, a contributor to popdose.com, and I was once lost for an evening in Branson, Missouri, and it was magical.
It was magic. So we
got to see Andy Williams. I did.
Did he make you sing the blues before he let you leave the club?
Yes, as a matter of fact. God. It was a very, very weird moment in my life.
That was a very, very weird scene in this movie.
But a very, very funny scene. I couldn't stop laughing.
It was fine. I fast forward to part of it. So this is a, like, anxiety inducing. If you like The Office, you'll probably like this movie. It's just stress and awkwardness and stress and awkwardness and stress and awkwardness. And since it's the 80s, there's pornography as a plot point.
So yes.
That's all you need to know.
I miss when a good porn magazine could be a plot point.
Dude, and like, I don't think there's porno in the Goonies, but isn't there some in Stand By Me? It's a plot point.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Anyway.
It wouldn't surprise me, but.
No. So we're doing Adventures in Babysitting, 1987, directed by Chris Columbus.
In his debut.
Yeah, this is his first film. I don't know where or why they got him. I mean, it's not against him. This is just such a interesting first production.
Well, he and John Hughes were buddies, and I know he'd written the script to Christmas Vacation, which came out 2 years later, so it was probably John Hughes giving a good word into his friend.
Yeah, I believe it.
Plus, actually, I'm going to go ahead and look him up here now, see what's going on. 1984, early success. There's not a picture of him, but there is a picture of Macaulay Culkin. He wrote the screenplay for a movie called Reckless.
Yeah.
And The Goonies. He wrote The Goonies.
Yeah, that
so
I remember.
It was another John Hughes sort of thing where he started out as a script writer, and then they said, okay, your movies are doing okay. We'll give you a shot at directing.
Yeah, and again, previous episode, Goonies. This movie, I saw the cut-to-shit version on Disney Plus.
Oh, my God.
This is, again, Disney. I don't know why they wanted this movie if they were just going to cut it to ribbons, but there you go.
I have a feeling that it was nostalgia for Gen Xers and people our age when you see this movie on cable and it would just be all cut to hell.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it was.
They just took whatever version they TBS had in their archives and put it on there.
What got cut? Because I heard there was a cut version where they just take out the homo part.
Well, the line, one of the most famous lines in this movie in that Warrior subway scene is, don't fuck with the babysitter.
Yeah, that's and cut.
Here it's, don't fool with the babysitter.
Yeah, this is literally a TV edit. So
Which makes that scene so weird because one of the kids tells one of the warriors to stop cussing and it's like, they aren't cussing.
Yeah, no one said any profanity. It's very bizarre.
So they cut bitch too?
Yes, they did.
Yeah, I think we get one, but it's at the mafia scene. Anyway, so this movie starts Elizabeth Shue before her and or her brother were on Beverly Hills 90210 or whatever was going on with them. Melrose Place. I think they were on Melrose Place.
I'm not familiar with the overall career of Mrs. Shue.
This movie is utter nonsense. We will get to it, and I know some of you out there like it, probably. I don't know. I'm assuming. We came up with this movie because we saw it on Disney+, and so I have it streaming, and I was like, yeah, why not? Yeah. We scheduled it because it was streaming for free.
Yeah, I got the uncensored version off Amazon Prime and watched it in my Kindle.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. On, you know, 4x6 or little tiny
It was
screen.
A Kindle Fire, so it was a bit bigger. And I could take it to the gym.
You know what? Kindle Fires do have a good quality screen.
Guys, this is not an advertisement for Kindle. They don't have
Amazon, give me money, damn it. Make it rain.
Well, he essentially paid a month what I pay for Disney Plus to watch this movie.
There
you
go.
You know what?
$3.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Disney Plus is dirt cheap.
Yeah. I think I paid $70 for 2 years or something.
And then you get to watch the reboot of DuckTales only on Disney Plus. Disney, give us money.
I was going to say, I will take Disney bucks. I mean, they won't let us swear or drink as much while we're recording. But, you
know, we want corporate sponsors.
This is soda. Okay, so.
Soda of the oat variety.
That's right, oat sodas. Big Lebowski's never going to be on this because I couldn't do it without quoting the whole thing. I could just...
Come on, Nick. Don't you want to find a stranger in the Alps?
Okay. Oh, that would be a version.
There we go. I mean, literally, I think Daniel and I could do it as a teleplay. Or just literally going scene by scene, line by line. The movie's on mute and we're just improvising the whole movie. R.I.P. Philip Seymour Hoffman. All right. So, smash cut. Elizabeth Shue gets dumped by her 45-year-old boyfriend.
Yes, Bradley Whitford, who doesn't have gray hair but is still a complete dickbag.
After a really nice dance number to a 60s song, and then he kissed me, which actually is a really good song.
Yeah, but Martin Scorsese owns that song now after Goodfellas.
I was shocked at how old he looks, and, I mean, obviously he's older than Elizabeth Shue. But he's only, I mean, he's 4 years older than Elizabeth Shue.
Mm-hmm.
I could have sworn he was half a decade. He was like a decade older. Like, he looks so older, especially at the end when we see him again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he goes from being, the high school boyfriend to evil douche frat boy.
Well, when you see him in the suit, that's the difference.
That's right. When he's auditioning for West Wing, that's when you know he's a corrupt piece of shit.
Unfortunately, this isn't the Bradley Whitford movie where he ends up getting shot in the ass.
He gets kicked in the ass.
He gets kicked in the
dude,
ass.
She smacks the shit out. Or he smacks the shit out of him. The dude does.
Anthony Rapp, who's also in this movie,
I believe,
is the one who kicks
him. Yeah, one of the two sleazy Weasley twins. We'll get to that later.
You know they're not related, right?
I know that, okay. But they look exactly alike.
They do look alike.
That is fair.
I mean, this movie is so confusing, we might as well just kind of go through it quickly. I can give the plot. After her boyfriend doesn't show up, Elizabeth Shue has to babysit. Essentially, it's supposed to just be a little girl. But when the brother sees who the girl is, who's babysitting them, they decide to stick around. And his buddy, Daryl, sticks around with him. Then, Penelope Ann Miller, Brenda, her best friend, ends up getting stuck at a bus station, and because she's a white girl, she's terrified of public transit, and everything goes wrong immediately. So they have to leave the house to go and try to save her. That's the plot.
And things just keep going wrong.
Well, they go pick her up, they get a flat tire, and from there, things just go horribly wrong.
It's awful. Like, it's one of those movies, again, this is like The Office, where, like, you can't just have an awkward moment. It just has to get worse and worse and worse and worse. And as I told Daniel when he first arrived, it's like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles without any heart whatsoever.
By the way,
that's what she said.
What?
Isn't that from The Office?
Yes, but that wasn't a real that's what she said moment there.
Well, you laughed.
By the way, they posted Kevin's chili recipe, by the way, on the code to Peacock.
They did. Follow Binging with Babish. You know what? Andrew Ray, if you want to be on our podcast, I know you listen. You're welcome on Myopia Movies.
Well, you said that this movie reminds you of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. It reminds me a lot more of After Hours, if you've ever seen that. Which was a Martin Scorsese movie that came in, I think, 2 years before this did. That was pretty much the same idea, except it was this accountant in New York who's trying to get home, but he loses his money while he's riding a taxi, so his taxi driver kicks him out or something, and then from there, things just escalate.
Does he wander around in Soho and meet weird people? I think I saw a movie where that happens.
Yeah, that's a good movie. I will also say... this is, as you pointed out earlier, one of the last credits you see is that produced by Deborah Hill. So this could have been a John Carpenter movie. And it has all the horrors of the suburbs. But this time, it's what if suburban people had to go to the city?
Yeah, this is the horror movie. God. This is the horror movie version of Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Chicago in the daytime is a wonderland for all these kids from like Naperville. You know, all these cultural events and stuff. At night, we have the crazy people and the car theft mafia and other shenanigans.
But I will emphasize here, the problem, like John Hughes in Home Alone, is not that people are mean for the most part. In fact, the first few people they meet try to help them. They're just like, oh my God, we're in this city and bad things happen in the city. Oh God, a black person.
That seriously seems to be a plot point.
Oh God, a black person. Over and over again.
The hook hand who turns into a crime of passion.
Now, is that not Jason Mantzoukas?
It looks exactly like Jason Mantzoukas. But this dude, I looked him up. His name is John Ford Kugan, Noonan, John Ford Noonan. And he mostly is a writer, actually. But he's probably one of those big honking writers who people see and they're like, would you do one scene? Because that's kind of what he is. He's like one scene at Next Stop Greenwich Village, one scene at Septuagenarian Substitute Ball. God knows what that nonsense is. He's in a short called God Had a Rap Sheet, and he plays God.
Of course he does.
He's a guy named Mitch in Flirting with Disaster.
Well, he's the non-union Mexican equivalent of John Goodman, so maybe he would play a scary god.
You know what? Actually, if Asylum made a version of that Green Room movie...
Oh! he beat the Patrick Stewart character?
What was the one with John Goodman?
Oh,
10 Cloverfield Lane?
There's the one. Yes, he would be exactly that. A kind of creepy John Goodman.
Or who played Walter in Big Lebowski?
John Goodman?
John Goodman.
Ah.
Wait.
I was thinking of him.
Wait, but who played the husband in Roseanne?
Who is Eli Gemstone on The Righteous Gemstones?
Great show. If you're not
watching... Who's giving you the finger?
Is it John Goodman?
I believe it is.
He's going to come through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and slap you around some.
Oh, dude, first of all, that man could come through a wall and kick my ass. Also, watch Righteous Gemstones if you're not watching Righteous Gemstones. That's a chef's kiss.
Did you see the most recent one?
I'm not caught up yet.
Okay.
No, we shouldn't mention it here anyway, because this will come out in a month anyway. So it'll be fine. Okay, so after presumably Daryl masturbates in a closet, they're all hanging out at the Anderson house. It's the Andersons that Chris is babysitting for.
Right. Where they have a three-car garage, so you know, detached garage, so you know they're loaded.
Oh, the McAllisters are their neighbors. And again, headcanon here. The dad McAllister is the same character that he is in Sopranos. He's a corrupt cop. That's how he can afford all these vacations to France.
For his entire family. Like, who the hell would pay for a vacation to France for their deadbeat brother?
You're either in the mafia or you're helping the mafia along. We're a pro-mafia podcast. If you want to join the Patreon, we'll plug Rao's tomato sauce. And whatever that brand of olive oil the mafia owns.
No, this $50,000 I spent on a trip to Paris. I ain't got it no more.
First of all, it's a shock that Uncle Frank has both of his thumbs and his kneecaps.
Gonna make Patreon an offer they can't refuse.
Old school.
I'm doing the cheek thing too. You know it's legit.
I know. If there was a that was perfect. It's legit. That was good. That was good. Okay.
Speaking of which, there is a mafia element in this movie that comes up later.
Deus Ex Mafia shows up. Okay.
Skullface.
So we'll get there. So, like I said, Brenda wants to go to town for some reason. Was there a concert?
She was running away from her stepmom.
Right.
Yeah.
So she wanted to be a big girl and go downtown. We've already mentioned the fact that the boyfriend kind of cancels a date, which is the reason she's available. And so Chris goes over.
Have we mentioned who she's babysitting? The little girl that's obsessed with Thor.
Thor.
Marvel Comics is Thor. I think in 1987. Yeah, it's just weird.
Which Thor wasn't a big deal back then, so.
No, but two things. That's the only reason why Disney bought this movie. Second, I'm positive that's a joke, but I'm sure. And second, the actress is Maya Bruton. She went to Yale for her acting school. And was the star of Parker Lewis Can't Lose for kids exactly our age. She was Parker Lewis.
That was a show that was on television at one point.
Yeah. And
so it was a thing that happened.
Yep. And she plays in Back to the Future. She's Baines' young sister. So she's when they go back, she's the mom's young sister in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I mean, she's been around. Good on her. And she seems to be a normal human being. You know, she was on 21 Jump Street. She acted recently. And, you know, she's married and an attorney and a human being. Good on her. I don't know, man. Looking at kid actors from the 80s, you just kind of crossed your fingers that they didn't end up dead. And again, good on the goalie, Goldberg from Mighty Ducks, because he's cleaned up. He's gaining his weight back. He's kicked the powder. He's doing better.
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of those kids just washed out of the Disney factory, and Disney's just like, well, we get to keep the residuals, so go fuck yourself.
Pretty much. Corey Haim got it the worst.
We have lost the Disney Plus sponsorship.
This is one reason I'm not super enthused about getting Disney Plus in the first place.
Mm. Oh, don't worry. They already own 20% of your soul.
Yeah.
They got it in a merger with Sony.
It's a partnership with Sony, actually. That's right. They own Matt's soul for all of 5 movies.
Now, unfortunately, the deal with the Episcopalian Church fell through. But there's very promising things going on with the Catholics right now. So yeah. we'll have to see.
So, will the undead shade of Walt Disney grant Henry VIII a divorce?
No, but he will make a musical about it.
See, I was under the
Will they be singing animals?
He has a sing a song of sixpence, and then there's like a pie filled with birds, and the birds bust out and break into song.
Yeah, a bunch of them are getting Anne Boleyn dressed up for the wedding, and a bunch more are carrying off Thomas More to have his head
Why are you
off.
Turning Anne Boleyn into a Disney princess?
I mean, at this point, I'd take it rather than a live remake of Snow White. There was that Banksy of Snow White that showed up outside of Euro Disney, where she's holding a machine gun and said, this woman stands for feminism and protects homosexuals, something like that. And it appears in my background.
Quite a rabble rouser that Banksy is.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, this is one of the problems with them trying to remake a live action version. She was supposed to be 14 and a 24-year-old starts kissing her unconscious body. There's problems with that story.
And she's living with 7 old men for a week.
For months, if I recall the story. But like, one way or another, it's just kind of unsettling. You know what? Not Warwick Davis.
Peter Dinklage.
Peter Dinklage is right to be pissed off at them trying to make a reunion.
In the Twilight Girl Snow White, the dwarves were cool. They all had Irish names, too.
So all of that ties us back into Adventures in Babysitting.
Because there are short people, after all. It's a kids' movie, sort
yes.
of.
All right, so essentially, like I said, she gets a phone call. Her friend is terrified. She's like, just stay here. Your brother and his perverted friend who's humping the refrigerator is here. You don't need an adult. He goes, no, we're coming with you. And they're getting the gang back together when they hop in the wood-paneled station wagon, we go.
Can we talk about that phone call the entire time? There's that homeless guy outside knocking on the phone booth going, you're in my house!
And then there's trench coat guy creepily waggling around a handgun.
Yeah?
And she screams. And by the way, one of the reasons I got this confused is one of the kids is played by actor Keith Coogan. Keith Coogan, right? Keith Coogan, who is Brad in this, is also in Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead. He's the older brother who gets stoned, and his sister's like, do the dishes! And they throw the dishes up, and they skeet shoot them, and he goes, girl, the dishes are done.
I have never seen that movie.
That's a fun movie. Again, it's a stay tuned, baby. That is pure joy. Okay, you wanted to talk about the phone call.
Yes, I mean, the entire time there's that homeless old guy that's like knocking on, you're in my house! You're in my house!
And on the ground, it's like a bindle filled with bean cans.
And I believe there was a toothbrush in there.
And a used condom.
And then one of the better jokes, she kicks it out of the phone booth, you've moved.
Yes, that actually was a good laugh line.
But I mean, again, this is like, she's terrified, there's like old and homeless people around her, she's never seen a homeless person because she lives in John Hughes America, so this is like a neighbor, like this is practically how the other half lives for the John Hughes generation.
In a John Hughes movie, it's like Metropolis, you're either incredibly rich or incredibly poor, and you exist.
That might be the first time Metropolis has been name-checked in a John Hughes review. So they end up driving down into the city on the freeway when the station wagon has a colossal flat. Like, it's not just it's a blowout. Like, the car goes flat. They haul off the side of the road, okay? And there's a truck driver named John Pruitt who shows up.
And they play it like a horror movie, complete with the hook hand.
Well, she was telling the kids a scary story about the whole thing where there's a guy with a hook for hand hiding in a closet that would scrape faces off.
And this is where we get Chuckoff's pornography as well. Because Erection Daryl has brought the March edition of Playboy, which is his dad's subscription, so he needs another copy, which we'll get to.
And the centerfold for that month looks remarkably like Chris the Babysitter.
A little bit.
I mean, but that's the gag. Like, Elizabeth Shue at this point has, you know, kind of a thin oval face, but a bunch, like, a hair filled with spaghetti curls, right? Very blonde, very curly, that's who the centerfold is as well.
Not the most hideous 80s hair possible, but we're getting there.
Well, you want to talk about 80s, you got to talk about, she's wearing like a man's cream color pea coat with the biggest shoulder pads. Like, yes. It's as though she's in a David Byrne music
video. And the Fourth Doctor's scarf for some reason.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. If I recall correctly, they're showing the pornography to each other. The little girl's in the front seat. The older brother, Brad, is like, get this out of the car because I'm also trying to make it with my babysitter, because if anyone's ever been in high school, nothing says I have a shot like a freshman boy hitting on a senior girl.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a walking erection trying to hit on an adult. We're fine. They throw the pornography out the window, and it's a Playboy. I know it's not super greasily, but this is a Chris Columbus picture. He's keeping it really classy. That's why he got to make Harry Potter. If it was a hustler, he'd be making Twilight movies. So,
if it was a hustler, I'd worry about that kid's dad.
If it was a penthouse, what would he be making?
Maze Runner?
Oh, there you go.
Anyway, so I paused dramatically. Anyway, so they're on the interstate. They blow out, and what is it? Handsome John shows up. Handsome John Pruitt, whatever nickname they give him. But again, like, because Debbie Hill had notes on this scene, the music falls goes flat. It's almost minimal score here, and he has a hook which gleams in the nightlight against the street, right? And he's like, "I'll fix your car," and he's just.
Her presence made me so disappointed. There's no stabbing in this movie whatsoever.
Oh my god, you know what he should have done? He should have taken the hook and slashed across the scene. There's a nail right here, like, because it's a comedy.
Yeah.
But he should just reach into the sidewall with the hook like he's about to stab someone and pulls out the nail and be like, drove over a screw or whatever it is. Like,
that's a pretty big screw. I once drove around for several months, a nail in a tire just got flat, got, you know, leaky and loose.
Leaky and loose. The Matt Quinn story.
Yeah.
So
you and I, we looked longingly across the table and finished each other's sentence. But, okay, yes, if you puncture the sidewall, you'll have a blowout. This is the 1980s. There aren't rules. It's Reaganomics, baby. Sometimes you just lose. The market trickles down all over your face and you pay extra.
Will, you don't have to wear a seatbelt, but god damn you if I find you with a marijuana cigarette.
That's right. Which we'll get to. They end up in a blues club in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
It is the driest, cleanest, gospel showiest jazz club that's ever been in a movie. Anyway, so he offers to fix the tire.
He tows it back to... he's towing it to his garage, and then he gets a...
Gets over the radio. His buddy goes, "You'll never guess what car I drove by your house. You'll never guess what car I saw."
Yeah, and then he freaks out, and he goes there. He finds his wife having an affair. He tries to shoot him, ends up shooting their windshield, like the mom's car's windshield, and they take cover in a Cadillac that's currently being stolen.
That's right. And again, we're joking about, like, the whole thing is they're telling a scary story. And, you know, John Pruitt, handsome John Pruitt, is a hulking man. Like, I don't know. I imagine they're all Elizabeth Shue is the tallest of all of them because she's a statuesque woman. She is, but like Keith Coogan and Anthony Rapp are.
She is a short woman.
Yeah, but the guys are shorter than her, I think. She's wearing heels. She's wearing the tallest heels she can afford. But regardless, Handsome John is about my height. He must be, because he's towering over them. And so he's leaning into the fact that the little girl's terrified of him by saying, you know, in that glove compartment, I've got the heart. No, the hand.
His lost hand.
And then he gets a phone call, and he opens the glove box, and they're like, what is it, the hand? He goes, no, it's a gun. And he has a snub-nosed pistol. And it's like, and everyone all of a sudden has a moment, but they start blasting at the car. And it's being stolen by a guy named Joe Gipp,
who takes them to a chop shop that they nicknamed Terra, which a whole bunch of unfortunate implications there.
They said, when is that?
Well, I mean, doesn't the Forrest Whitaker lookalike guy say, welcome to Terra?
He does. Yeah. I will also say, of course, we should mention Joe Gipp here for a second, because he turns out to be cool. One of these things is that he's kind of not that much older than them. And we hit this a couple times, which is that, hey, suburbanite fuckheads, you guys are lucky. Get that through your thick skull. Because we get that later where they come across like a hooker who's supposed to be like a high school senior or something, who's actually a 45-year-old woman pretending to be a high school senior. Yes. But like this keeps coming up. Like he's supposed to be like maybe a few years older than Elizabeth Shue, but he's stealing cars for this gang that's controlled by the mafia, which Chris Columbus, we're here. Right.
Yeah, because there's Forrest Whitaker lookalike, and then there's Skullface.
We'll get there.
I mean, we pretty much are there.
Yeah, I mean,
right
I was
now.
Gonna say we'll get there. Like that's where we're getting. He's like, look, man, I'll take you home. You just have to let me drop this car off, etc. But they get there, and they're like, the fuck are these kids doing here? Hey,
they punch Joe Gipp.
Which is a punch of freedom, because when he gets punched, he's like, well, I'm gonna help the kids now, which. You know, again, he's a lost boy. This is the 80s. There was just a Foot Clan being formed. And he's like, hey, you're going to punch me? I'm going to help the kids.
Yeah.
And by the way, we're saying kids. All these people are 35 years old.
Yeah, the world's most top-heavy Foot Clan. You've got like 10 40-year-old guys and one 20-year-old guy.
It's exactly right. This is what, 87? So Elizabeth Shue is actually 24 when this movie comes. I mean, it's fine. It is what it is. And Coogan's actually 17. Holy hell. Anyway, we're fine. I'm just looking at these people as we go. But they get to the mafia's house. And again, this is as though someone has watched a mafia movie lately, but not really gotten the subtext. It's a chop shop.
Oh, I mean, I saw Goodfellas in the bar last night. The sound was off, but I got the gist of it.
And he's like, look, we'll deal with the kids later. Meanwhile, we're having a meeting of the mafia here.
Talking about the Cincinnati order and the Philadelphia order. And what was the Cleveland? Was Cleveland the place they blackballed?
I think they blackballed Cleveland, because wouldn't you?
We don't need that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame money.
Yeah. Jim Brown is leaving, so we're done.
So we don't talk about Cleveland?
No, no, no.
Can you tell he's around high schoolers a lot?
Yes, I can.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie yet?
No.
Have you heard the song yet?
I know of the song's existence.
It's on YouTube. It's free. You don't have to buy it from iTunes.
It's on Amazon Music as well.
You can just watch it for free. It's fine. It's catchy.
I think the first song in that movie was the best song.
By the time this comes out, I guess it depends on whether Daniel gets off his lazy ass and edits it earlier or later.
I have a home again, or at least a temporary stable address, so hooray.
He's living in a refrigerator box under the freeway.
Yes.
Is that better or worse than a van down by the river? I'm thinking it's worse.
I would much prefer a van down by the river.
And I'm assuming
can you imagine
the
turlets in that van? I will say, at one point, as we're recording, it depends on whether or not it's won the Academy Award, but Dos Oruguitas is a pretty good song. It's cute. I mean, and I like the visuals in the movie. It's messy at times, but it's good. Anyway, so they get locked up in the office.
Yeah. This is one of those warehouse sort of things where it's like a central office on the second floor that's just overlooking the shop floor where they're chopping up these cars.
Right.
And so then they climb up out of the roof of the office, because it's like a little modular building looking office.
Yeah.
And then walk across a beam over the mobster's heads.
And this is after Daryl's stolen the Playboy that he saw in the office, which apparently had the Philadelphia order on it.
A bunch of incriminating information.
Which he wrote on the centerfold. The Greasley Mafia guy wrote on the centerfold.
I did like how the Forrest Whitaker guy, and forgive me, I've already forgotten.
His name is John Canada, I believe.
Ron Canada, Ron okay. Canada.
His brother John Canada.
Oh, he was in The Shield.
He was.
All right. Anyway, I did like that bit where it's like, go get the magazine. Where's the magazine? Well, I left it in the office. There was an article that I really wanted to read. That part was pretty amusing.
I will also say Ron Canada has been in two previous episodes as well, National Treasure and Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. No, he's in the sequel. We did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He's in the sequel, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid. So you know, we've talked Ron Canada before.
He's in The American President, apparently, if anybody remembers that movie.
Yeah, no, we haven't done that one.
He's, you know what, he's a good presence in this movie.
He's fine.
I say Forrest Whitaker look like as a kind of a compliment, because Forrest Whitaker's got such commanding presence whenever he's in a movie.
Well, and I mean, in this movie, he does a lot of the heavy work later. He'll be hanging from a building, because of course he will be. So the kids escape, they get to the roof. Gip kind of sees them running away and shakes his head. You son of a bitch. They've gotten away. Everyone's okay with it.
Well, they need the magazine back, so that's going to come up.
He doesn't realize that at first. And like you said, what's his name? Canada?
Yeah, Ron Canada.
No, but what's the character's name? Have we figured that
Grayson,
out?
I think?
Okay, yeah. Grayson tears the thing apart, tears the office apart, realizes that they're gone, realizes that they probably have the magazine, therefore, because... you know, chronic masturbator Daryl is trying to replace the magazine for his father.
So, chronic masturbator, the kid is like, what, 13, 14?
I mean, it's his occupation at the time. He's fine.
Yeah, I mean.
But still, it's kind of like, oh, good, he's replacing his father's pornography. Great. Hey, great. They enter the blues hall, and at this point, they run down the stairs and they enter a blues hall.
Now, this is what? Where I think, the movie kind of falls apart for me real quick, because this scene...
20 minutes in? 30 minutes in? We're not that far into the movie.
We're not that far into the movie. It's a little further than 30 minutes, but I just realized what was going on here. John Hughes, like in stuff like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles...
Which he also wrote.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
He's trying to be realistic. Like, that conceivably could happen, you know, getting your plane diverted, getting stuck in a shitty hotel where somebody breaks in and steals your money... having to try and rent a car and that goes wrong. All that stuff is, yeah, it's one calamity on top of another, but it's real. It's realistic. After Hours was pure fantasy. The situation that was going on was like a fever dream that the main character's having. This movie's trying to have it both ways. It wants to be like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but at the same time, it wants to be a fantasy, because nothing that happens to these kids, especially on one night, could really happen.
No, yeah, absolutely. You get semi-held hostage at a blues club by people who want to make you sing.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, in case you're curious, this movie was produced by something called Silver Screen Partners. And if you don't know, Silver Screen Partners is kind of like an LLP that just piles people together, you know, just to raise money for movies. This is post-studio system, so it's just people piled together. By the way, one of the main members, one of the shareholders of Silver Springs Partners... at this time, was former President George W.
Really?
So George W. was, a silent partner in this, because he just was a member of... But I don't know why that tickled me, because it's Buena Vista in the end. It's a Disney production, but they're just the distributors. The production company is Touchstone, which is also Disney.
Yep.
But Silver Spring Partners 3, which is a George W. Bush company.
We cannot allow rogue Italians to hold our suburbanites hostile.
Which is hold them hostile?
Which means him and Chris Columbus were doing blow together, because this is still 80,
oh, yeah.
Right? 88?
No, 87. God love him for getting clean, but yeah, for a while he was definitely doing a lot of blow.
That's right. And... also helping Thor out, so that's fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Vincent D'Onofrio as Thor in this movie, so he's part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh, he's the variant. That's, he was. That needs in the second season of Loki, that needs to happen. We need the Vincent D'Onofrio Thor variant.
That needs to happen yesterday.
We already have Croaky, so it can't get any weirder.
Yeah.
Totally. Okay, so talk about this blue scene, Matt. You wanted to talk about it.
Albert Williams, as himself, he must have been a prominent blues musician, basically says, you're not allowed to leave the club unless you sing a song. And eventually, all of them start singing, like, the whole plot of everything that's happened to them so far. And it is actually really funny.
What about it was, and I'm not trying to be condescending when I ask this, what about it was funny to you? Like, why did you think it was so funny?
Blues music is about really terrible things that happen to people, but this is like first world problems, kind of, that they kind of make into a blues song, and it stylistically works. I mean,
With that B.B. King riff that they've got up, well, she doesn't sing at first. She starts talking, and she's like, my name is Elizabeth Shue, da-da-da-da-da, and then they just lean into it.
Well, I mean, to quote George Carlin, because I think Matt's exactly right why it's funny, he was making fun of the House of Blues, and he goes, white people can't sing the blues. The blues is what white people do to black people.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's the joke. They're like, oh, my car got a flat tire. Da 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 da. And you're just like, oh, you poor people.
Although we'd already had at this point the perfect movie about white people taking over the blues, and that's the Blues Brothers, which is set in Chicago,
which is just a few years before this.
To be fair, they did kind of get shot at.
Oh, dude, I'm not judging you. It's just, why do you need to summarize the plot of the movie when we're halfway through? It's like there was a commercial break, and they're like, all right, Grampy, sit down. Well, we'll tell you what's already happened.
Well, considering how much this movie's language was cut, it might as well have been a TBS break advertising some new dish at Denny's.
That's true.
So anyway, they improvise a song called Babysitting Blues, and apparently the crowd likes it and they're allowed to leave.
They are. And then right around here, and the mob comes in the back door, right? Like, so they're in the club watching them as they sing.
Mm-hmm.
They escape. Everyone kind of slows them down so that they can get out the door. And they start running towards the L, which is the above-ground train.
Yeah, it's the transit system in Chicago.
Somewhere around here, Brad tells her that he loves her, which is great.
And Daryl, the other sleazy Weasley twin, meets a prostitute.
Yep.
Yeah, who is supposed to be, like, their age. I'm in high school, too.
Also, at this point, we cut back to Brenda in the train, in the bus station, excuse me, and she's had her glasses stolen.
She's watching the Brady Bunch or something on one of those TVs you pay for, like, 10 minutes for a quarter or whatever, and she puts her glasses down for some reason for a minute. And
she's trying to take a nap.
Yeah, and they're stolen immediately by a woman who will come back later and replace with her spangly sunglasses.
And then she is looking around and she thinks she sees a cute little kitten, but it turns out to be a rat.
Because, of course, and she screams. They're like, and this Hispanic guy's come up like, lady, you got to put the animal down. We have to kill it. And she's like, it's a cat. And he goes, it's a sewer rat.
It's a giant sewer rat.
And she screams and then dies again. This woman is in a Final Destination movie where everything else is in a stupid movie. Anyway.
She's also in The Relic.
She is absolutely in The Relic. Now we're on the L. And on the L train, we enter Guys and Dolls.
We enter the Warriors.
Warriors come out to play.
Yeah, basically.
So in the middle of this Michael Jackson music video, she decides to say, I'm a babysitter, and they don't murder her.
Well, because she gives them the ultimate advice. Don't fool with the babysitter. And this is after she's called a witch, which is apparently the worst insult possible.
And one of the sleazy Weasley twins gets stabbed in the foot.
Yeah.
Accidentally.
I was talking about the Disney Plus version, which this is where they just censor this movie to hell.
They do. At one point, someone pulls a knife. And the knife falls and lands in his penny loafer because he's a white rich kid. Right?
I thought he was the gang leader didn't like him mouthing off, so he's doing it on purpose. You know, I'm going to spear you to the floor.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah,
probably.
It was, but it's funny that he's in loafers.
It's more realistic than suggesting that gang members talk like, you witch.
That's true. I mean, and again, they are dressed like the Thriller music video. They're just, it's a cartoon. They are in a cartoon.
Can you dig it?
They take him to the hospital where he receives a stitch, apparently for free.
A stitch.
A single stitch because it just falls between his toes. But apparently for free because later they're short on money and...
I think they ditch them before they get billed.
Or not maybe the kid just has good insurance. Who knows? It's, I mean, Reagan's,
it's
the, America.
It's Reagan's America. I don't know.
Although, was this around the time where we get that Seinfeld bit with Brenda trying to pay a hot dog vendor with a check?
Yes, absolutely. It's still good money. Yeah, this is a cash-based business. I also...
You need to learn to embrace the check.
It's stupid. It is so stupid. Again, though...
That was a joke I didn't think was actually that funny. Wiener entendres notwithstanding. It's okay to think wieners are funny, Matt.
It's totally fun. Just a pile of wieners. And toilet water. It's one of those, like, sausage...
Yeah.
First of all, lady, this is someone who's heard of Chicago, but if you're ordering a hot dog from Chicago, it's got shit all over it.
Oh, yeah.
Not, I mean, again, I find Chicago dogs, but there were no peppers. There was nary a pickle. There was no mustard or relish or ketchup. Not, how dare you give me a naked wiener in Chicago? You need a flesh.
How dare it be a wiener instead of this big Polish sausage, man?
A sausage. Oh, dude. How is there not an SNL character walking through this?
Bill Swirsky needs to be in this movie.
Dude, he could have just been the hot dog vendor. What's wrong with you, miss? You need a sausage? Like,
I'm back to selling hot dogs after my 12th heart attack.
Here's a heart attack. Oh, God.
Do you think that hot dog vendor only serves Pepsi, and if you ask him for a Coke, he'll get mad?
Dude, A and two, he has a bunch of beer, and he offers her a beer because he's not carting because it's a hot dog cart. And he's like, what, are you a cop or something? And she's like, I am 16. He goes, yeah, do you want a beer?
Just go ahead and take the beer.
The beer. Actually, you know what? Point in fact, how is there not a Cubs jersey, a White Sox jersey, a Bears jersey, anywhere? Like... You could have told me they actually filmed this in Atlanta and believe you. There's not a single anything that denotes Chicago other than, yeah, hey, a black blues guy. That's
pretty much.
Yeah. And yes, that guy had the mildest of Chicago accents. But if you're going to choose scenery, baby, it needs to be a hot dog vendor.
Well, that's what the Blues Brothers got right, because that is clearly a Chicago movie.
And you know what? That Canadian puts on a Chicago accent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is from Canada. I bet they got schmods.
They got schmods. Smods?
State County Offender.
Keep going.
Maintenance data.
It's like municipal.
No, that's what it is. Good
State
Lord.
County municipal
offender data system.
Officer, the light was yellow.
The light was yellow, sir.
That's a movie I could just watch.
I love that
I want
movie.
To get it in 4K, only so that the surround sound is...
Oh, I've got it in 4K. Maybe.
Is it beautiful?
Great.
I'm sure. I'm sure. Okay, so...
So...
They're told that their car is repaired. They run into Pruitt again at the hospital after the guy who thinks they stole the car is pissed.
He fixed the windshield.
He fixed the windshield for free, and he's like, it's $50 for the tire.
Well, he took it to another garage and paid for the windshield to get fixed, but they want $50 for the flat tire.
Because that's right. He's not a mechanic. He's just the pickup truck guy. Yeah. And at this point, they have the car, but the guy wants $50. They don't have $50, but walking down the street from University Hospital, they see a kegger.
Yes.
Because this movie refuses to finish. And again, we're like a third of the way through this fucker.
And at this point, some of the frat brothers are actually asking Elizabeth Shue to autograph the Playboy centerfold.
So we're just checking back in. Do you remember the fact that there was pornography in this? By the way, the guy we're singing...
Is this University of Chicago? Because those are the nerdiest frat guys.
I mean, it might well be. University Hospital is usually.
I would imagine Georgia Tech has nerdier frat guys, but
I've been
to
some of those parties, yeah. But that being said, some of the best frat parties I've been to were at GFT. So So the guy, there's a guy singing because someone saw Animal House the week before they wrote this script. And the guy singing is Southside Johnny. He is considered the father of the New Jersey sound. And John Bon Jovi acknowledged Southside Johnny as his reason for singing. So we have him to blame. So there you go.
Of all the people from Jersey, you went with John Bon Jovi and not like Bruce Springsteen?
Hey, Wikipedia gives Southside Johnny credit for making John Bon Jovi want to sing. Yeah, from Neptune, New Jersey. Anyway, so he's singing in his
kitchen. Is Bon Jovi halfway there to being Bruce Springsteen?
No.
No, not even close.
So he's not living on a prayer.
I guess he is if he gets somehow referenced in movies like this.
Yeah, fair enough.
I want to be famous, Lord. I shall grant you your prayer.
They wanted Molly Ringwald to be the star. And over 150 actresses auditioned, including Valerie Bertinelli.
You know, Molly Ringwald was supposed to be in Blue Velvet, right?
She was.
This Laura Dern character.
Molly Ringwald had more. She was supposed to be in that than almost any actress I know.
You know, at this point, Elizabeth Shue's dancing with this college guy, and
who turns out to be really important later on, by the way.
Well, and important here because he's the one who like helps her get the $50 that they need for the tire.
That's right. And like you said, at this point, a bunch of frat guys are trying to ask her to sign the Playboy, which matters because Daryl has ended up having a beer or something and is kind of half drunk in the corner of this frat party. And this girl with a lot of bad makeup starts hitting on him because all her boyfriend wants to do is talk about the Browns and the Bears and whatever other football name she checks. So she starts to make a move on him in time for, you know, Blondie to come back and try to kick his ass.
Yeah, it's a whole jealousy thing. You get pulled into those college drama bits.
That's and they right. call him a bow hunk repeatedly.
Yeah, which means nothing to me. I don't...
It's like an ethnic slur for Hungarians or something.
Oh, okay. Matt is our dictionary of racial slurs, so if you have any to ask him about, let us know.
Oh, boy. No, we're not going to do that. Please don't do that, like, ever.
The guy who plays it is named George Newbern. George Newbern was in Father of the Bride, which is actually the 1991 remake with Steve Martin. Martin. Yep.
All right.
Oh, and he's a voice actor. Holy shit. He is the voice of Clark Kent Superman in almost every DC thing that's animated for a long time, including the Injustice games.
The Injustice games?
Yeah, he's the voice of Clark Kent and Superman in those Injustice games.
You mean Injustice League?
No, Injustice, the fighting game that's the DC fighting game.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Yeah, so he just got into that DC crowd, and then other than Saw 4, which good on him, I guess.
DC, sponsor our podcast.
Well, that would be Warner Brothers sponsor our podcast.
Dude. HBO Max, you're probably the best streaming service. I'll give you that. I will be sponsored by HBO Max.
They definitely have some good stuff coming up in March. They've got Halloween Kills is coming back. Dune is going to be coming back.
And
brought to you by HBO Max.
And the best interface of almost any of them. That is sponsor-free. Yeah. It is an excellent interface.
Plus, that's how you get to see The Righteous Gemstones.
The Righteous Gemstones, Rick and Morty, Season 5, now available on HBO Max. Sign up for AT&T today.
Come here, Morty. We got to go to Chicago and get a kid, Morty.
Oh, dude. Who would be the drunkest one there? Yeah, okay. So, you know, that dude, George Newbern, playing Dan Lynch, the college student, is, you know, he's just a good dude. He finally just shows up and is a good dude. He helps take them to the repair shop. He lends them the $45.
Well, that's all he could raise, and even though it's 50, which is going to be important.
Five. Yes.
Important in the next scene when they get to the garage, and we get a special guest star in this movie.
Vinny D'Onofrio.
The Mighty Thor.
Yeah. Vinny D'Onofrio, as the Mighty Thor, rises out of the ground holding a hammer with these beautiful blonde locks, which I'm positive he's bald now. But, well, maybe it's just because I saw him as Kingpin. But still,
he's pretty close to it. He certainly doesn't have those sort of locks anymore.
Those luscious locks. He rises out of the ground. The girl, little girl, convinces him that Thor's supposed to be friendly. You're a dipshit. And then she punches him in the balls. No, none of that happens. She gives him a hat.
And she gives him Thor's magic helmet, which isn't a thing in the comics, little girl.
And that causes
his
heart to grow three sizes that day.
And he goes, kid, keep it. I've got one at home. He doesn't charge him, like, whatever, a $5 leaving fee because, you know, it's the city and we're all fuckheads. Hey, forget about it, you.
Why did they do the work exactly before they had the customer there who could give them the money?
I don't know, man. I'm going to assume it's just Pruitt being like, hey, buddy, they're coming. Help me out. Do me a favor.
Yeah, that's fair.
No. I mean, that's all I assume. Essentially, it's like you guys are $5 short because they established at the beginning Elizabeth Shue forgot her purse in the rush out the door. And so she doesn't even have $5 on her.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was a big thing earlier when they wanted to call Tow Truck. She's completely without money throughout this entire escapade.
Yeah.
And the movie wouldn't really work today. No cell phones, no ATM cards.
You say that. They tried to remake it in 2016 for Disney, and God help me, I watched that Home Alone remake, and it was awful. It was...
Why did you do that to yourself?
I have a daughter who's 5, and she just wanted to watch Home Alone, period. We watched the first one, we watched the second one, we watched the third one, and I'm like, hey, a new one, let's do anything, and it was even worse somehow. And I like people involved in it. I like Ellie Kemper. She's one of the villains in it.
Ellie Kemper's in that?
Ellie Kemper is in it, and it's just... Ugh, it's so bad.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I mean, and the kid who's in it is the fat friend from Jojo Rabbit.
Oh no.
Rob Delaney is in it too.
The one who said it's so good to be a Nazi or
yeah,
whatever.
Him. He's the kid. He's the new Macaulay Culkin.
Please no one ever edit that and use it out of context.
No. Rob Delaney is the other thief.
Wait. It's Always Sunny?
Yeah. No, that's... Well, yes, he's in it, but it's... You're thinking of Ron. You're thinking of someone else. But Pete Holmes is in it. It's just... It's awful. We're supposed to be sympathetic towards the thieves. Yeah, no, it's not good. Don't watch it.
Good boy. My brain is breaking right now.
Disney Plus has crap, except for their Star Wars and Marvel properties, and other people make that for them. So
anyway, they get their car back from Thor, and that really was a cute little cameo from Vinny there. This came out the same year as Full Metal Jacket. I just want to point that out.
One made him money, one didn't. I bet you he made more money from this than Full Metal Jacket.
Probably.
I mean, I love that movie, but he made more money from this movie. Yeah, hand over fist. So they're finally on their way home. They're trying to pick up their friend from the train station, wherever she is. She's at a bus terminal somewhere. I don't know where.
But yeah. The problem is we still have Skullface and not Forrest Whitaker.
Yes.
Yes.
We like the you know, Red Skull's after them, and he's trying to get back the pornography because, you know, he's a completist. And he wants to make sure he has every episode because that's not the kind of thing a loser would do. And they essentially drive past this toy store and they're heading.
They drive past a fancy restaurant. And they see Elizabeth Shue's boyfriend's car there.
Which is just it's a Camaro that says Pussy Wagon or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's in there first basing it with, as Daryl says, oh, she's the easy one in the grade or something like that. It's really just, wow. Okay.
And
so
this is when we find out just how much of an asshole the boyfriend is, because I did not get that at all from him earlier.
It's Bradley Whitford. Of course he's going to be playing an asshole.
That's why he was in the West Wing as a White House staffer. But yeah, again,
I'm sure he's a perfectly nice guy. He's great at playing assholes.
And you need that. You need that. So he's taking another girl to, you know, it's, you know, white tablecloth kind of place. It's just a nice Chicago steakhouse or whatever it's supposed to be. It's
where Ferris Bueller's parents were earlier that day.
That's right. He's about to run into the Sausage King of Chicago.
I was about to make that joke.
Exactly.
Froman?
Yes, Dave Froman. Sausage King of Chicago. Dave Froman. Meanwhile, Thor Girl has found Lady Thor, I guess now we're talking Lady Thor, because that's going to be the new movie. Lady Thor has found the dessert tray, and so she's just eating eclairs off a silver plate, because why not?
Good for her. I'd sneak into a Michelin-starred restaurant.
Chekhov's frosting.
That's right. We'll get there. Meanwhile, Fuckhead is getting the shit kicked out of him by Daryl, who's like, she's beautiful, and she's like, she's Elizabeth Shue. What the fuck's wrong with you? And then punches him in the balls.
And then, of course, Daryl and Elizabeth Shue end up crashing in the mountains in a plane and waiting 6 or 7 months to get rescued. And then that's they right. end up marrying each other when they both survive. And Rick and Morty, I'm just taking that as far as
but
I can.
But who gets eaten, though?
Thor girl.
Yeah.
Delicious, tender. She's like the veal of a person. So they're triumphant. They go out into the street and they rush past again a top-hatted doorman who's like, "Oh my God, I was jerking off earlier. Are you Miss March?" And yeah, I mean,
because Thor girl has gone to the toy store and that's when the mobsters catch up with her.
That's right. There's like a cheap. I mean, again, it's downtown Chicago. This isn't even like a toy store. It's like a bodega with toys in the window, and she's looking. The mafia shows up.
Well, Skullface, I think who Matt is referencing, is like, "Hey, come here, little girl," and then she just starts running away, and then they give chase.
Yeah, and then they end up in Crime Alley. Like, Batman's parents are being murdered just next door. Like, this is literally...
And at some point, a janitor gets punched out.
Yeah. And
that happens a little later because...
she's running towards her parents' building. She recognizes where her dad works.
And that's where they are, is apparently this big swanky party... Die Hard style, which came out the next year.
Yes. So, can you imagine? John McClane, you've got to watch this movie, Bruce, because this is what inspired me to write Die Hard.
Well, considering the third act entirely takes place on floors under construction, hey.
It is! I mean, like, literally, the whole point of this is that she's trying to find her parents because, like, literally the Deus Ex Mafia has shown up, and they're trying to end the movie, and she's like, "Oh no, the movie's ending!" And so she's looking for her folks, who she knows are at her dad's office.
Thor girl has gone into the disused floor, and they can track her by the frosting fingerprints on the buttons.
That's right. Because she doesn't know exactly which floor they're on, she just knows that her dad works up high, so she, I presume, just guesses. And gets it wrong. And so they're looking for her based on the fingerprints. She ends up, again, she might as well just bump past John McClane in an elevator, because that's where this movie takes place.
Again, better Chicago elevator scene, the Blues Brothers.
Oh, totally. Hup, 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 hup. I think we're going to just watch it. After we're done recording, we might just put it on. But instead, Canada chases her out a window.
Yes.
And that's when, you see him actually start worrying, because I do not think he was wanting to actually hurt the kid. He's wanting the magazine back. Skullface is a dangerous one, because he's like, "Little girl!"
Well, and Gip at this point shows up, too. We first have to do the Mr. Bean bit, where they're all at the dinner party, because they guessed the floor wrong. And they're all like, "Oh no, my parents are here! Let's steal a coat with the highest of fur collars." Because it's also 1987. Did we mention that? There's also a cocaine room, which is off-camera. But everyone is clearly just doing blow and like martinis.
Shue looks like Cruella De Vil when she's wearing that coat.
And then, better movie than Cruella.
And then Skullface catches up to her, but gets distracted by someone who thinks he knows the caterer.
Right.
And meanwhile,
the mom, literally their mom.
It's the mom.
And meanwhile, Elizabeth Shue then ties his ankles up with an extension cord, and he apparently does not notice.
And then he falls and loses consciousness for half a second. They're like, "Oh, gee. Oh, gosh. Are you all right there?" In the meantime, the daughter is literally on a slanted window outside the party going, "Hey, Dad! Dad!" Because no one looks out the window, I guess. This is like the most boring Hitchcock movie that's ever happened.
It's very Blairian. Like, you know, evil principal is like stalking him, and you know, there he is in the TV behind him.
Mm-hmm. Totally right. I don't know if any of you stayed through the post-credit sequence, because there is one.
There is?
Yeah. He shows up and asks if she wants to be in the Avengers.
Okay.
No, they cut to John Canada still outside the window, They do. He's like trying to get back in.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's true. There's literally a post-credit sequence.
So that's another John Hughes thing that Chris Columbus borrowed.
Yeah, totally. You're still here?
Go home. It's over.
It's over. Go home. But yeah, so the kids are all back together. They figure it all out. The girl can't find one of her roller skates. But they're like, we just don't have time. We've got to go home. Wait, is that your parents' car? So they blast past them.
Well, if you forgot Skullface, he's going to murder the kids, and then Joe punches him out.
Yeah.
That's right. Joe Gibb. Because he does not care for his life, and he will end up dead very soon.
Yeah, he should have kept that magazine and traded it to the FBI for a new job in San Diego.
No, he would still die under those circumstances.
I mean, Deus Ex Mafia. The movie ends, the next day the dad should be picking up a newspaper going, honey, that was a great reception. Joe Gibb found dead on the sidewalk, shot 37 times. Right? Like, that kid is dead. You don't punch a mafiosi in the face and make it out. You don't. Well, actually, he's going to get acquitted by a judge. And
well, at the very least, he's got his magazine back, so, hey, he can just deny everything that happened and then hide the magazine.
Well, thank God the kid didn't grab the Hustler. That's where the coke deals were listed.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
They're racing home. The parents only drive 45, baby. And so they go 80 to get home first so that everyone's upstairs watching TV. She's on the couch casually reading a Time magazine. She does... She cleans up the countertop. She tosses the dirty dishes in the sink just as the parents arrive. They do end up picking up Brenda despite herself.
And that's how you know she's young, by the way. She can stay up until 1 a.m. and still have the energy to wash dishes.
I teach high schoolers. I'm tired of listening to them talk. They do so. I'm just like, guys, I fall asleep on the couch at 10:15. I just need to go to bed. I am an old man. Leave me alone. Get off my lawn. Get out of my parking spot. My name is on it. You leave me the fuck alone.
Your goddamn music sucks.
That's right. You and your Britney Spearses and your...
Olivia Newton-Johns and...
Your Jonathan Taylor Thomases. Anyway, so smash cut to the credits. Go home. It's over.
Dan shows up, and he's like, I want to hire you to be the babysitter.
Yes, he brings back the girl's roller skate. The parents are like, who is this adult man who's trying to kiss our babysitter? But they return the roller skate, which, again, if I were the parents and I had just closed the door and another car shows up, I might still have questions. I'd be like, who is this child? And this other college kid? What's going on here? Potentially a drug.
Well, again, it's past 1 a.m. They want to go to bed.
That's right.
Plus, the mom was clearly bored by the party.
The mom was clearly drunk by the party.
Yes.
And, you know, the guy has been drinking cocktails to the point where he's like, 45 is fine on an interstate. Like, nothing else is happening tonight. They're going to get out of their clothes and they're going to sleep for the next 12 hours. And someone's going to pick up an Egg McMuffin because it's 1987 and they're new and popular. No one's ever... Can you imagine McDonald's having ham? Like, my goodness. What kind of a miraculous Reagan's America morning are we going to have? Some sort of Minute Maid orange drink and an Egg McMuffin.
California raisins on the side.
That's right. I heard a song about citrus just yesterday from the ad council, and now, damn it, I need to get myself some of that orange juice. But yeah, that's kind of where the movie ends. They smooch him up, and you know, everyone's watching them make out.
Yeah, with the Weasley twins and Thorgirl as the encouragement.
Yeah, and Daryl closes the shades as he starts masturbating, and then we end the movie.
Yeah. We end the movie with, and then he kissed me again.
Yeah,
the
reprise.
Yeah, because again, this is John Hughes wannabe.
And then Henry Hill shows up with Lorraine, what's her name?
A whore lives on 37 Addison Street. Dude, if she drove around outside of that guy's house and said, a whore lives here, a whore lives
you
here.
You stay away from my husband.
That is awesome. All right, this is the movie. Matt, did you like it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Sponsor us, LA Fitness. Guys, I was laughing so much watching this in the Kindle, I probably disturbed the other exercisers. But this movie, I thought, was really funny.
Good.
First and foremost, Lorraine Bracco is who I was thinking of there. Bracco, yeah. I don't mind this movie necessarily. I just think it was trying to have it both ways too much. It was trying to be realistic, but at the same time a fantasy. And I think there was a disconnect there that the movie didn't address. And as Nick looks at me, sticking his tongue out at me, I know I have the unpopular opinion. If you like it, it's fine. Especially if you were of age when this came out. But for me, I don't know. There are certain scenes that I love. The Blues Club scene was actually pretty charming. There were a couple others that I really enjoyed, like the subway scene that would have been better on Disney Plus if it wasn't censored to hell. But other than that, I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd ever voluntarily revisit this again.
I like the structure of the movie. I like the meaning of the movie. I like the suburban kids fearing the city, but they shouldn't be because it's very straightforward and simple. I thought this movie was incredibly awkward. I don't like awkward comedies. I think it's just too much. And I'm just like, it makes it feel like there's not really a structure. This movie is just, what now? What could possibly happen next? Oh no, it got worse. So it's not my kind of comedy. There's a reason why this movie ended up on Disney Plus. There's a lot of crap from the 80s that wouldn't. I know it must have a cult following then. I have no problem with that. And so I'm glad, I guess, George W. Bush made money off of it. But in the long run, this movie is a weird in-between movie of about 30 other movies we could have talked about.
Rarely is the question asked, is our children getting kidnapped?
That's true. Now, problem is with this movie. Where's all the cocaine?
You sound like Gary Busey.
No, he sounded like George W. first then.
Anyway, so we're out of time. Thanks for listening and subscribing. Thanks for reviewing. Thanks for sharing this. So I've just decided now, because we're talking about it, we are doing this in conjunction with another movie, which is on our Patreon feed. Maybe. We're not sure. So we're doing a month of Elizabeth Shue movies, followed up by Hollow Man. And we'll do something else for Patreon. I don't know. Daniel, you're editing. You decide for me, because I've been drinking.
So this Choose Your Own Adventure?
Well, for our editor, and that's it. So in case you're listening still, consider joining the Patreon, patreon.com/myopia, where you may or may not find another Elizabeth Shue movie this month.
And join our Facebook page, Myopia Movies, where I reign with merciless memes.
Yes, Matt is kind of our social networking dude, and makes sure we're updating our tweet, and then sends me passive-aggressive texts in the morning if the website isn't properly updated. So, you know, he has his uses. Also, he's funny. And follow his blog, According to Someone.
Oh, hell, just go to my Amazon page, Matthew W. Quinn.
According to Quinn. Anyway, thanks, guys.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from incomptech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.